Welcome to the Gut Doctor Podcast, where Dr. Neil Parikh describes GI disorders and answers common questions related to the GI tract. Please note this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. We hope you enjoy.
Artificial intelligence is everywhere in healthcare. And given the critical role of imaging technologies in gastroenterology, it's not surprising that AI has significant clinical applications in GI. And to discuss these possible applications, I would like to introduce Dr. Michael Wallace, Professor of Medicine and Director of Digestive Disease Research and Innovation at the Mayo Clinic in Florida. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Very happy to join with you, and congratulations on this very nice podcast you've developed.
Mike, for the sake of our episode, I'm going to limit artificial intelligence just to its applications in GI endoscopy, because obviously, as you know more than I do, there's a big breadth of where AI can really reach. So before we dive into specific GI applications, can you teach us some terminology? And obviously, these are loaded questions, but can you tell our listeners what is artificial intelligence and what is machine learning? Maybe the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, thank you. Artificial intelligence obviously is a very broad term that really refers to assigning tasks to a non-human, typically a computer algorithm that would typically require some level of intelligence, such as responding to a question, or in our case that we're going to talk about some today, identifying objects in a picture or a video stream like a polyp, and determining if that's something that's clinically important. Machine learning is really the process. It's how we train these algorithms to do the task at hand. And this is where you can imagine you take lots of pictures of one thing, classic example being a dog, and a lot of pictures of another thing, the classic example being a cat, and you train an algorithm to recognize the difference. You know, in our GI world, you train it to detect a polyp versus a normal image of a colon.
So let's extrapolate from dog and cats. You mentioned polyps right there. So let's start by probably most of our listeners who are in GI, and maybe even of our patients, may be familiar with the most widely used AI application currently, which is CAD, or computer-aided diagnosis for colon polyp detection. Where is it now, and where do you see it going?
A computer-aided detection for polyps is the application that's the furthest along. This is now in clinical practice. There are multiple systems that have been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for clinical use. And across the world, they've been approved by the European equivalent of the FDA, where I was recently practicing in the Middle East, they were approved. So these are in our endoscopy suite. You can purchase these systems now. Originally, these were systems that were standalone, or you know, kind of a box that you attach to your endoscope tower. And now many of the endoscope manufacturers, the usual companies that make our endoscopes, are building it into their processors. Many other applications have been very well studied scientifically, and yet they just haven't made it all the way through the FDA process yet.
Are we still using the terms CADE and CADX? I just recall, you know, I want to say 5-10 years ago, the resect and discard trial, where if we could really accurately make an in vivo diagnosis, you know, if we saw a polyp and we knew it was hyperplastic, we could remove it and then not have to send it for additional path analysis. Do you think we will get there?
Yeah, I think to your first question, we are using the term CADE for detection. That's answering the question, is there a polyp on my screen?
Okay.
And then CADX, computer-aided diagnosis, to tell us, is that polyp hyperplastic, adenomatous, serrated, or is it a cancer? You know, to your second question, you know, resect and discard has been a concept around for many, many years. It, even with other non-AI related technologies, it never really took off in a broad way. Although Certainly all of us who practice GI find lots of small, diminutive, obviously hyperplastic polyps in the rectus sigmoid. And I think most people I talk to, including in my own practice, if I have a high level of confidence, it's a hyperplastic polyp in the rectus sigmoid, under 5 millimeters, I don't remove them. And most of the people I talk to aren't removing those as well. So I think we are in a way already practicing, at least diagnose and leave behind. And AI is one other technology that gives you an extra level of confidence. If you think it's hyperplastic and the AI technology confirms your clinical suspicion, that likely makes people more confident in that decision.
Yeah, I think it's the confidence, because I know we've had other non-white light technologies that we've used, whether it's narrowband imaging or multiband imaging. And the more confident we get, the more likely we are to not need that second level of analysis or path confirmation. Let's stick with the lower GI tract. What are your thoughts on AI assisting in improved optical diagnoses of colorectal cancer? And then secondly, potentially telling us if these lesions are endoscopically resectable.
Yeah, I think these are still, I would say, well-studied scientifically, but not yet in clinical practice. We know from very high-quality clinical trials, at least two large randomized trials that are part of the FDA process, that these technologies improve your adenoma detection and your adenomas per colonoscopy, and not in a subtle way. The improvement was very significant, both clinically and statistically, in detection. In terms of the diagnosis, I think probably the most important question that we face isn't, is it a sessile-serrated polyp in the right colon or an adenoma or some other low-grade lesion, because we essentially remove all of these. The question many of us face, especially those who resect larger flat polyps, is this a malignant polyp? Something that I might perform an advanced resection if it's superficially invasive? Or is this something that I would refer to a surgeon if I thought it was deeply invasive? That question has been studied quite well. The accuracy is very good for the systems that have been studied. For example, asking an algorithm to distinguish a deeply invasive polyp from a superficially invasive polyp, from a non-invasive polyp, with the appropriate management for each of those. But it's not a widely in-demand application, such that the companies that develop these systems are willing to spend the kind of money in clinical trials to go through the FDA process. And that's been one of the major limitations of many of these technologies. They do work. They work very well, but it's very expensive to take them through FDA approval. And unless it's a very common application, such as our routine colonoscopy and adenoma detection, it's harder for companies to justify that pathway and expenditure.
I see. So speaking of a potentially common application, let's shift gears to inflammatory bowel disease. We both know there's literature when it comes to digital chromoendoscopy, which again, traditionally was narrowband imaging or multiband imaging, and the IBD patient. Do you see, or is already being done, a CAD-like system for IBD dysplasia detection?
Yes, and those, I would say this for almost everything that we look at through an endoscope, everything we're trying to detect and classify, whether it's dysplasia in the background of IBD, even bowel preparation scores, quality metrics, like did you identify the cecum? Every one of these questions has been studied and published, not just once, but multiple times. Now, with flat dysplasia in IBD, it's a harder technological question to solve. Just as we know endoscopically, it's hard to see dysplasia in a background of colitis. I think probably the most likely application we're going to see in IBD is scoring inflammation. And not for the obvious reason that, we need to know that in deciding drug therapy, but in the clinical trial space, when companies that make biologics and other agents for IBD study their new drug. One of the problems, as we all know, is there's a lot of inter-observer variability in scoring. And if you're studying a drug and need to know what's the response of your drug, you need a very reliable scoring system. And historically, that meant showing video clips to many people and having them score it and getting an average score. But now with AI systems to tell us, is this, you know, mild, moderate, or severe dysplasia, or using the appropriate, you know, for example, a Mayo scoring system, the AI technologies are very good at this and very reliable, much, much more so than asking one or two physicians, but much more on the scale of getting a panel of experts and a consensus.
In one sense, you're reducing the human error and the human subjectiveness.
Correct. And it's not always human error. It's just natural human variability. We all describe some degree of red as either a little bit red, a lot red, or very red. And it's hard to quantify that.
Yeah. I mean, another application with the bowel prep scores was similar, where, you know, a 0, 1, 2 would be different for me and you. Let's shift gears to the upper GI tract and upper endoscopy. I know there are companies out there using AI in the Barrett space and esophageal cancer. Can you tell us about these and if you're incorporating any of these in your clinical or research practice?
So in Barrett's, we all are looking for whether there's dysplasia. And as we know, we typically would biopsy that, and if confirmed low grade or worse, we would resect that. And we know, as with really all of the things we look at through endoscopes, there's challenges with uniform detection and classification. So the same questions we face in polyps, or I would guess more similarly, flat dysplasia in ulcerative colitis. We've seen literature, most of this coming out of the Amsterdam group that's really been the leader in the world in Barrett's detection. Dr. Roos Pauw and Dr. Jacques Berkman have published the ability of their systems to detect and classify dysplasia, whether it's low grade, high grade, or cancer. It is challenging still to distinguish the latter classifications, the superficial cancers that we might remove from the deeper cancers. But we know that there's a very high degree of human variability. So I do think AI will likely eventually help with that latter classification. But for the common question we all face when we scope someone with Barrett's, is there some degree of dysplasia?
Yeah.
Can it be highlighted? And can we do some targeted biopsy or resection? That's been quite well studied and published and works well. It's not yet in the clinical arena, just for the same reasons I mentioned before, which is the challenge of getting it through the FDA or the European Commission equivalent.
I see. I'd also seen some in the literature, some work with AI and Helicobacter pylori and gastric lesion detection. Is that also something that's been shown, at least in the research arena, but not necessarily in the day-to-day clinical arena?
That's correct. So H. pylori produces a very characteristic pattern of inflammation. When we train people to look for H. pylori versus non-H. pylori gastritis, there are certain things we as humans can look for, the so-called regular array of collecting vessels or rack vessels that are lost in H. pylori infection. And I should say, when we train these algorithms, we don't necessarily train them to look for the same thing that we as humans might teach our fellows or colleagues what to look for. Most of this is agnostic to a particular pattern. You know, in the world of polyps, we don't teach it the Paris classification. We just give it pictures of, in this case, the stomach with H. pylori and the stomach without H. pylori. And they develop a bit of a black box classification scheme that distinguishes between those two entities, but it doesn't necessarily tell us what it's looking at, whether it's looking at, you know, changes in the blood vessel patterns on the surface. But these technologies work very well. I think even for dysplasia detection and early cancer of the stomach, trying to distinguish something we might resect endoscopically with an ESD procedure. They work for really every application we've looked at, not we, myself, but in the broader literature of the endoscopic scientific community.
Mike, as we start to wrap up the episode, any other applications that you're particularly excited about or that are coming in the near or distant future?
Yes, one of the things I'm quite excited about tends to be some of the, I would say, maybe more boring applications, but are clinically going to be useful. It's things, for example, that record or take your endoscopic video feed and start to write a report. And it can very easily say, I recognize that you found a polyp, and then I recognize a snare device was visible on the screen and can even tell us the size of that polyp, and it can estimate a location based on the time from the cecum and start to write a report. And these aren't necessarily things we think are so technologically sophisticated, but if they save you, you know, 3 to 5 minutes at the end of every procedure, they're going to be quickly adopted because they have value to the practice. Even things like inventory management, it can recognize a certain type of a snare or a certain type of a biopsy forceps and reduce that from your supply chain, from your inventory, and even place an order for another one. So these practical kind of back-end applications are likely going to be those that are easily adopted. There's less burden from a regulatory perspective for something like that than, say, distinguishing a malignant from a non-malignant polyp.
Yeah, and I think with the two examples just mentioned, there could be great benefits from a, you know, physician wellness, physician burnout standpoint, and from a standardization of quality. You know, right now, again, there's some human variability in terms of size of polyps, type of tools we use. But if we have some AI assistant telling us this is the size that's interpreted and this is the tool we may want to use, that makes things a little more standardized.
Yeah, we get into a whole other area. I know we're just talking about endoscopy today, but what's called ambient clinical intelligence. It's things that sort of listen to what we do and watch what we do. And as you know, every time we encounter a patient, we have to write a document about that encounter, whether it's in the clinic or in the procedural space. And we know physicians are spending far too much of their valuable time just documenting. If you had an ambient system, whether it's watching your scope or listening to a conversation with a patient and writing that document for you so we can focus on being attentive to the patient's needs, I think that's a win for everybody.
I agree, Mike. Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate your time today.
Very happy to be here today, and congratulations again on this broader project that you're doing.